Welcome to Rooster Radio. I'm Andrew Montesi with James Begley, and it's an interview of a different kind because James Begley is interviewing me in this episode. Don't really know why, but he was keen to pick my brain about podcasting and what I've learned in the last 18 months when I started Rooster Radio with zero clues about what to do through to now, where we've done about 80 episodes and I've done about 120 episodes in total. So for better or worse, I unpack what I've learned over the last 18 months. And if you're interested in podcasting, I hope you get a little bit out of it.
Andrew Montesi, welcome to Rooster Radio.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be on my own podcast.
It's a pleasure to interview my co-host.
Oh, it's great.
Today is a bit of an experiment, really. We don't have one note that we're following. It's going to be, we've got a piece of time where we're going to discuss, I guess, the evolution of podcasting. And the main reason is because every man and his dog seems to be hitting you up and wanting to talk about podcasting.
I'm pretty sought after, James, let's be honest. There's people lining up outside the office now just wanting to pick my brains, and you're the first one.
So no, I don't blame them. But the test is for you to leave the sarcasm out of this.
Yeah, I'll try.
I know you're going to want to play this whole thing down. But to begin with, I want you to explain a year and a half ago where you were even at with podcasting, because it's been a bit of an evolution over a small space of time.
It's a good question, and our loyal Rooster Radio listeners have been on the journey with us, so they would probably know this as well as anyone. But if you go back to our first couple of episodes, which is quite shameful, but we've kind of left them up there as a bit of a historical, as a badge of honour and a historical reference piece. But we had a USB mic plugged into my MacBook. The mic was stuck into a crate. So it was elevated, and James and I would gather around and lean in to the microphone. I would then edit it on GarageBand. I Googled how to set up a podcast and followed a bit of a tutorial. I paid someone in the US $20 to do our hardcore trance intro and outro. Remember that one?
It sort of burnt the ears. It was terrible.
It was diabolical, and because I was cutting it up on GarageBand, the intro and outro was super loud, so people would like turn down the audio, and then the audio of the interview was really low, so then they'd turn it up. It was just terrible.
But even before that...
I did jump ahead of step.
Yeah, what was your interest, if at all, in podcasting preceding that?
So my interest was, having produced a heap of different content over the last 10 or 12 years, written online content, TV news, almost everything apart from radio and podcasting. So I just started listening to podcasts and was pretty keen to give it a go, just set one up and see what would happen, more just as an experiment. You and I at the time were talking a fair bit of shit, as we tend to do, and thinking that the world probably should know all these amazing insights that we've got. And we soon found out that that wasn't great. I think we lasted one episode of you and I chatting, and then we needed to wheel in some people to interview to kind of prop us up a bit.
At that point, what podcasts were you listening to that were, I guess, giving you some inspiration about this medium?
At the time, it was Tim Ferriss, which I still listen to, and Mixergy, a startup podcast. What I liked about those two podcasts was they're both very personal, very informal. They're not overproduced. And that's kind of what inspired me about the medium. I didn't want to invest in anything that would need to be overproduced. I'm not an audio technician, as I've just described. I just wanted to create some content that was interesting and could be efficient. I think given our workloads and what most people were facing, no one wants to be sitting around for a day cutting up the perfect podcast. You just want to be able to do an interview or produce a piece of content and get it up ASAP. And it seemed like that would be possible with podcasting. There's been emerging trends showing growth in podcasting, particularly in the US. So it just seemed like something that was worth having a go at. The other thing was when you start out with a medium early on, there's always going to be less competition. So at the moment, like, blogging is extremely competitive. Blogging's very accessible, so everyone's got a blog. back in the early days of blogging, the early adopters were the ones that profited the most out of it. And even though there's plenty of podcasts out there now, I still think that there's plenty of opportunity.
Coming back to those early days, I mean, there wasn't much of a plan other than just, I think we set ourselves the task of doing one a week just to get the frequency up in the first sort of month or so.
Yeah, and you were good like that. We made the commitment to be consistent. You know, you're a man who likes to set out values and goals, and I'm not as good at that. So that was good. We were accountable, and I think we pretty much stuck to it. I think we had the odd week where we didn't get one up. And we've pretty much gone week to week, apart from the occasional break. But consistency is the absolute key, particularly with podcasting. It's a subscriber medium. So if you want to get subscribers, your subscribers are going to want to know that there's regular content coming through. There's no point just putting one up in a month and then three up in the next month and then nothing else for 2 months. I mean, why would you subscribe to that?
There may be some people who are thinking about starting their own. If you were going to break the creation of a podcast, the technical aspects into just some big chunks to describe what it is you need to do, what are the major pieces of the puzzle?
To probably go back one step, I'd look at the reasons why you would want to do a podcast first.
So we didn't have a reason.
No. Well, you know, I think we kind of consider ourselves as thought leaders, James. So, no, but there was a bit of a purpose in that at the time we were focusing a bit on your leadership consultancy. I just started my own marketing consultancy. So we thought, you know, if nothing else, this might assist what we're trying to do there. But in terms of the type of people that could create an interesting podcast is really anyone with a story to tell, but experts in their field, whether that might be business, health, sport, fitness, someone who's got particular insights or an expertise.
So you have to have an angle.
Yeah, exactly. I think you have to have an angle. And if you're looking at something more creative, it might be storytelling. So you might have a story or a documentary. There's got to be some type of angle, exactly, as you said. And then kind of the strategy. So working through what the actual purpose of your show is going to be, what does success look like? Again, we didn't have a whole lot of clarity about that.
We didn't, but there was a clear expectation that they're interesting people doing interesting things with a focus on people who have taken a risk, wasn't it? That was developed pretty early.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of what does success look like, as you said, our metric was to deliver something every week, and that can be it initially. Just committing to a time frame and committing to delivering content in an ongoing basis. So that is a metric. In terms of the technical stuff, as you said, the good thing is that there's pretty much a setup for anyone, whatever budget. So we had a budget of zero. So I think I went down to Alan's Music or something down the road in Rundle Mall, picked up a USB mic for $100. My MacBook already had GarageBand, and quite literally that was enough to be able to get something up. The other aspects to consider though are hosting. So you've got to pay a host to hold your content. So a misconception is people just think that you upload it to iTunes, but you actually upload it to a host account. There's SoundCloud, which is what we use, and there's others like Libsyn and Audio Boom and all these others, and it might be around $15 a month or something like that. That generates a little RSS feed, and that RSS feed is what you copy and paste and give to iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, all the podcast players that are out there, and that's how the content gets syndicated out there. So there's that. And then what else is there in terms of the setup? So that's your very basic, your $100 mic. We upgraded to the Rolls Royce of podcasting, which is the Zoom H6. So the Zoom is a quality little machine, and It has four ports for mics. So then you've got the cost of the Zoom, which is around the $700 mark from memory. And then you can pay anything for mics from...
I was going to pay Derringer's and then they realised we were such big influencers in this space. They decided to give it to us for free.
Yeah, so we just drop the Derringer's name every so often and we get a little clip and a clip as well. Not quite. No, we had to pay full price, unfortunately. So then we had to... You buy mics on top of that. So a decent mic can be... Well, a cheap mic is $40. A decent mic can be up to $200 and above. But I think we settled for $70 mics and we've still got them and they're going strong. Then you've got the cords for the mics. All the bits and pieces, you end up spending about $1,000, which depending on your budget, I still think that's pretty damn good given the wear you get out of it. It's a great little machine. It's small and portable and we've carried it around everywhere with us. We've been able to record wherever we are.
We jump back into, we've just started to get a little bit of traction. We've maybe upgraded from the one microphone plugged into the computer. What do you think were some of the reasons as to why Rooster Radio sort of gained some listeners?
Just before that, one thing that I did forget to mention was the importance of getting an efficient system. That's what really helped us. And that probably did help us with listeners
as well.
When you
say system.
So the system is not only the technical equipment, but getting a system in terms of editing, uploading, making sure it's like, I think if the content is delivered in a similar way each time, it's far more efficient to actually produce the content. So I've got an editor who's based overseas. He understands what I need. I understand how he works. He's awesome. He turns our episodes around overnight most of the time. He's currently on leave at the moment, which is very distressing because I've had to wait a week for episodes, which is disgraceful. So Nathan, if you're listening, actually you'll be editing this, mate. So if you're hearing this, get your act together. He's been brilliant. So he turns it around overnight, which has enabled us to, as I said early on, just to turn this content around really quickly. So that system has been awesome. And then from there, to come to your next point, distribution has been key as well. So it started off with us telling our mates, sending links around saying...
I think there was a text message that went around after our first or second episode that said something along the lines of, you're dead to me unless you rate us 5 stars on iTunes.
It was very aggressive. And it worked.
It was successful.
It was highly successful because what we've since learned, and we didn't know at the time, was that you can kind of hack iTunes a little bit. And if you get a certain amount of 5-star ratings early on and you get a certain number of people subscribing and just opening the episodes, then that triggers something with the iTunes algorithm. You get bumped up and you get featured in New and Noteworthy in iTunes. And then when you get featured on that landing page, then you get a heap of other listeners and then you get boosted up the ranking. So, I don't know how we did it, but I think we'd done 3 pretty average episodes, not average, but poorly produced episodes. Ended up, I think we peaked at number 14 under business in Australia, which was quite surprising. And we haven't been able to get back up there, but it just shows how key it is early on to have a good strategy in terms of kicking things off. Like if you've got an existing database or you've got a good group of mates who can support you, if you've got an engaged social media following, you can kind of build it up, let people know that you're doing this podcast, get them prepared to subscribe and review, then you'll be able to get bumped up the rankings pretty quickly. I did the same thing with a client of mine, my accountant, Accounting Insider. He did the exact same thing. Except he's got like no social following, no social influence whatsoever. All he's doing is this podcast, doesn't even really share it. And we managed to get him featured in iTunes. And he's getting really consistent numbers still even now. Like he's got consistent subscribers. He's been hit up by the head of marketing for one of the world's biggest surf brands, who's now become a client of his, who said, this American guy who said, oh, Kim, you're like a superstar in my home. somehow this bloke ended up listening to this Accounting Insider podcast from Adelaide. So it just shows you the power of it. So there's the early launch phase. And then ongoing, it is a bit of a challenge because discovery with podcasting is really difficult at the moment because iTunes isn't that great as a platform. It's
when you say discovery, do you mean people stumbling across?
Yeah, people finding the podcast can be quite challenging because, like, let's just say if I'm just promoting, like, what link do I use to promote the episode? Because you've got iTunes, which is great for Apple devices, but there's a heap of people that have Android. So then you've got a second link, which might be SoundCloud. So if you're promoting your podcast through social media, what are you going to do? You're going to promote two links. Which one? You kind of want to drive people to iTunes because you need the reviews and the subscribes, but it's far easier to send someone to SoundCloud because they can just click through where they are. So what we've been doing is putting the links into a blog where people can just click through into an embedded interview via SoundCloud on our blog, or they can click through to iTunes, but it's all hosted in the one place. So that was a lot easier. And then the other cool thing which helped Rooster Radio was partnering up or doing a bit of content syndication. So in Daily, a local media outlet started covering Rooster Radio interviews and linking through to our podcast and embedding our chats as well. I think that's a really important one, and I think probably underutilized as well for other podcasters is partnering up with other bloggers, media outlets who might have similar values and similar audiences. You can collaborate. I'm sure they would love the content, and it gives them something to write about, particularly if you can incentivize it by giving them first crack at it, or you might even be able to commercialize it, sell some advertising around it. I think the collaborative stuff is going to be even more important.
It does seem that some of the bigger media giants either just don't get it or don't want to get it. Why is there a hesitancy to take podcasting sort of on from their own point of view and really get into it?
I think it's a fear of what they don't understand.
So what's the inherent difference between, say, a Seven West, a News Corp, and, you know, a Rooster Radio popping up?
What's the difference is they've got bureaucratic systems in play. They don't understand the benefits. A lot of these major media outlets, radio isn't necessarily their first point of contact. So their primary medium. So they don't have that initial understanding about how it works. So that's the first point. They don't know what it takes to be able to produce decent audio content. Because they have an existing audience, they're responsible to shareholders. They can't afford to tinker with potentially poor or not well produced content. It's probably a bit risky for them. That's what I would imagine. The ones who are in the box seat are guys like Oz Stereo, where radio is core to what they do. They have the existing infrastructure. They get it. It's not a big change up for them to switch from normal commercial radio to investing in podcasting. And we're already seeing that with Oz Stereo having a big crack at it with an international partnership. But yeah, regarding the other guys, they just don't understand it.
One of the comments which we had in a meeting was just regarding the feeling that, you know, like podcasting can kind of, you know, cannibalize each other. So if you've got a podcast, if someone's got another podcast that's a little bit similar but a bit different, we're in the same space. Inherently, though, it seems podcasting is like a truly collaborative play. You know, you see Tim Ferriss has, you know, another famous podcaster on his show, and then they'll reciprocate in a little bit like social media.
Yeah, I think one of the keys there is that it's evergreen content. Well, it should be anyway. It's part of a podcast strategy. You want your episodes to be relevant for as long as possible. You shouldn't follow daily news or things that will date an episode, because the nature of podcasting is it's on demand. You should be able to listen to it whenever you want. So therefore, there's no reason to be competitive, because if Tim Ferriss interviews James Begley and what's his face? Andrew Warner from Mixergy interviews James Begley, well, they might be two completely different sets of insights that come out of both interviews. And I might listen to Tim's interview with you this month, but then I might not get to the Mixergy interview in a few months later, and they could still be really relevant. There's no competition. Whereas the major media outlets, they're still in a news cycle where it's like, and they still have this, what I think is a misguided thought about like breaking news and getting the story first. It's all about first. And it's like, nah, social media killed being first to a story a long time ago. Like if we're here on Lee Street and we see a punch up between the Premier and a Liberal Party member, we see it and we tweet it, we've broken the news. So that's kind of the whole being first to news isn't really a thing anymore, but it's still massive for the major media outlets. That's kind of their metric rather than quality content. I think it's challenging times for them.
Anecdotally, what have been some of the reasons as to why people listen to podcasts or maybe even listen to Rooster Radio?
Yeah, regarding podcasts, the on-demand nature, as I touched on, is just gold. So I never thought, when I first started listening to podcasts, I never thought that I would listen to a three-hour interview with Jamie Foxx. Jamie Foxx, an actor that I had a mild interest in. I'd seen him in a couple of things. And I saw that Tim Ferriss put up some two-part epic series. It was 3 hours in total or something. And I just chipped away at it for like 2 weeks. I was on, you know, back and forth on the bus, just 20 minutes here, 20 minutes there. This is just gold. And so the on-demand nature, you just...
And just to follow that, we've had people tell us they've listened to Rooster Radio while they're running marathons.
Yep.
While they're at work. I think even my accountant, he mows the lawn.
Yep.
Listening to Rooster Radio.
And it's a key point because it's the only medium where it can be... You can consume the content as a secondary activity. So with every other piece of content, video, you've got to stop what you're doing, you've got to watch a video. If you're going to read a blog, you've got to stop what you're doing, you've got to read a blog. Whereas I can continue doing my activities, whatever I'm doing, working, cleaning, I don't clean, but whatever, and I can still be consuming the content. And it's the only medium that allows you to do that. And I think that's what makes it massively powerful. It's also a mobile first platform, so it's designed for mobile. Mobile's everything these days. I think 64% of podcasts are consumed via mobile.
The interview style of podcast, which is what we focus on, seems to elicit very raw and honest responses. Why do you think it's good for that?
Yeah, it's podcast interviews are really authentic, accessible. You feel like you're listening in to a couple of mates having a chat. You almost feel like you might be the third person in the room. And it's funny, you build like, I think as a result, having someone just chatting in your ear, and particularly once you've subscribed to a show and you're hearing the same people chatting over the course of time, you kind of get to know them and you almost build a bit of a relationship with them. And it's funny, I've had, even with Rooster Radio, people who I don't even know coming up and just chatting to me like they knew me. Oh yeah, I listened to your podcast, and they're chatting about stuff that was on, and like, it's like, it was really cool. It was kind of like the whole, like they've struck up a bit of a relationship with us just through listening to the show. And I think that's a massive factor. And even listening to the advertising, like we've joked about it. Like you subscribe to a show and like Andrew Warner, again, on Mixergy does it really well where he just integrates the ad into his interview.
He almost treats it like an experiment and then reflects and reviews how he read the event, which is quite an effective technique, isn't it?
Because it's very effective.
You're doubling up the message.
Yeah. So it just becomes part of the chat, and he's talking about Top Towel, where you get, you know, what does he say? Like they reject 85% of developers. They're backed by Andreessen Horowitz.
I mean, this guy's from Y Combinator.
And all of a sudden, like, you know, I haven't really cared about the ad for the first 10 episodes, and all of a sudden I'm listening to it in the gym and I'm Googling Top Towel. I'm like, yeah, maybe I could use Top Towel. But it's just, it's a pretty effective way of advertising. And in terms of revenue as well on advertising, it actually gets the highest results or the highest cost in terms of value per 1,000 listens or downloads compared to all the other mediums. So I think it's like, I know, I've got some stats here, which is interesting. Tim Ferriss's earnings are through the roof. I think he earns, is it like $100 per 1,000 downloads or something like that? And he gets millions. So it's ridiculous. Yeah. So they reckon average amount is $20 to $40 in advertising revenue per 1,000 downloads.
What have been the bits that have sucked about it, if any? What are the hard bits?
The hard bits is kind of integrating it into our world. I mean, we've done really well in that it's just, we've got a pretty efficient system. We know what we're doing, but it's just continuing to book interesting people, line up the dates and just keep getting it done. It can take up time and sometimes it's frustrating, but we always say that it's actually ends up being the best part of our week. So it's worth putting some time aside to sit down with the right people. And I think we've done that really well. We've managed to get some amazing people on our show, not necessarily big names all the time, but just people doing really amazing things. And, you know, you can be having a pretty crappy week and then sit down with someone and just have a chat for an hour and all of a sudden you're pumped up again and ready to go. So there's all those other side benefits that aren't necessarily correlating to listens and subscribers and all of that sort of stuff.
What about the future then? What would you love to achieve in this space before I do a rapid fire on you?
I'm just preparing you
because
I'm no good at asking rapid fire questions, let alone answering.
That's what
them.
I mean. You'll probably fail the rapid fire being the rapid fire.
What did you ask me a question then?
Yeah. So where would you love for it to go?
Me personally, or for
you personally.
For me personally, I just love creating original, interesting content. So I would love to continue creating different shows. So you and I have also set up Off Field, which is similar format to Rooster Radio, but our focus is more on the sports industry. So we're talking to whether it's athletes, sports stars, or other people within the industry, professionals, about their world. And we like to steer clear from your stock standard news agenda. So the focus is more on basically the world of sport outside of the arena. And that's been great. And we've got a number of other ideas for different shows. I mean, it's all about time and money and all of that sort of stuff. But I'd love to effectively have a media company where we're creating original content that we can distribute ourselves or potentially partner with other media companies to distribute if it's of a good enough quality. But I think we're at this day and age, we're in a really good position where we have the ability to create content and distribute it our own way. We don't actually need the major media outlets if we don't want to. We actually have a fair bit of power and we can produce really good content at a relatively low cost and reach our desired audience. I mean, even with Rooster Radio, that's been a very lean operation, but for $20, we can boost a post on Facebook and deliver it to people in that exact field of interest with ease, without needing to pay $1 squillion to News Corp or whoever to be able to advertise or distribute our content.
Three or four highlights of interviews or people in the 80 or so or 100 or so podcasts that you've done?
Good question. Kevin Foley, I think, is definitely one of my favourites for a number of reasons. I think he helped put Rooster Radio on the map. We didn't really know what we were getting into. I didn't know KFOL, but Richo, a mate of mine who's also in Daily, gave me the introduction, sent me his mobile, and I think I just sent him a text and said, "Oh, we've got this podcast. Do you mind coming on?" And he said, "Yeah, no worries." And then he wheeled in and we were all very well prepped, thinking, you know, this is a very serious politician, the former South Australian treasurer, knowing that he's a bit of a lad, but not really knowing what to expect. And the bloke was just amazing.
I think there are 7 expletives in the first 10 words that he used just saying hi to us, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think that's right. That was before we'd even walked into the room. And there was a few politically.
In a good way, though.
In a good way. Yeah. He's a lad. Like, he's just a bloke that you would chat to at the footy club over the bar, really, like that sort of bloke. And it's actually where I really started to understand the power of podcasts and how disarming it is. And, you know, we chatted for a couple of hours and he opened up stuff that he'd never spoken about, particularly the backroom deals to do with Adelaide Oval. And I mean, he's a very hard on his sleeve type guy, very, I think, lurches from big, intimidating bulldog personality through to very vulnerable, open guy. And you could kind of pick that up through the podcast. So that was a really good one. What else have we had? Jeez.
We got evacuated during Josh Baker's interview. I don't think he actually ever came back.
No, that's right. He left and didn't come back. That was typical Josh, now that I know him better. But yeah, we got evacuated mid-episode. I always enjoy the fact that at the start of most episodes, you don't actually know who we're interviewing.
that is slanderous. It's an absolute stitch up.
There have been a couple of occasions where old mate Beggs has come, you know, waltzing in like the superstar, old school news reader of the 90s, you know, expecting to have his script written for him. And who are we interviewing? Oh, okay, fine, no worries. And then, oh, what are their names? Very standard James. So there's
absolutely
that aspect.
Absolutely false.
But we've had some crackers. Like,
I loved Nick Mitzovich's first answer.
Yep.
About absolute gold. About what is art? What is art?
So Nick's great. I mean, another great example of how Rooster has evolved beyond the podcast is we've got a bit of a Rooster crew that we get together fairly frequently. Nick's been great. He hosted a heap of us guys down at the art gallery. And what I like about guys like him is he's in the arts world and it can be quite pretentious, but his whole angle is opening up the world of art to punters like you and I. And he just does it in such a great way. Like, he's genuinely passionate about preaching art to average Joe.
Okay. Rapid fire. Okay, unless, what I will say though is if we do get a lot of comments about the episodes, and if anyone is interested in hearing more about any aspect of the podcasting journey, feel free to hit us up on roosterradio.biz.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Look at you. I was leaving you hanging there.
And I'm pretty sure we got a Facebook page.
We do. What's your Facebook address?
It's the Big Rooster with a
Facebook.com/roosterradiohq.
There it is. Get in touch with us and ask us if there's any other aspects of the whole world.
Are you stalling as you try and think of rapid fire questions?
We're still learning a lot about it, and but thoroughly enjoyed the process. I thought it was important to just get some of these thoughts down because I am serious when, you know, more people are asking about Rooster Radio and off field than they do about our day jobs. So it does go to show that you know, we're doing some good things. Okay. Time for rapid fire. Number of podcasts that you've done?
Good question. I think it's up to, so I've done, yesterday I put up episode 76 of Rooster Radio. This will be 77 if we decide to upload it. I think it's been pretty good. I think we'll upload it.
Yeah.
Yep. And then we've done 13 off field and I've done maybe...
So you're failing the first rapid fire question.
It's not... And then, hang on, just bear with me. And then maybe 30 for Accounting Insider and some for a law firm as well. So I'm well over 100.
And what's your other little side project? It's got a great title.
Which side project?
With Richo.
Oh, the podcast. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Dads Don't Know. So we started this podcast. This was, again, with our old kit. So it was, the audio was pretty crap, but... last time that was featured on iTunes, this is how stupid iTunes is. Like, I know we've touched on the platform's pretty average, but this test case podcast, Dads Don't Know, I uploaded 3 episodes, forgot about it, and it was featured for at least 4 months. At least 4 months. It may even still be sitting there. I haven't checked in that long. And you can hear Richo's droll reviews of Fireman Sam. I don't know if we got to the Wiggles. And his references, referencing Thomas the Tank Engine and comparing it to the Thatcher era. Yeah, so that's a little underground one.
Top five or six in your playlist at the moment. Who are you listening to? What podcasts?
Five or six. I don't actually think I've probably trimmed it back a little bit, but I'm back into Mixergy. You'll be pleased to know. Tim Ferriss, as we've spoken about. I've just downloaded Sports Geek, who I interviewed for Off Field the other day. So Sean Callahan there does some good work in the digital sports space. Oh, How I Built This is really good. This How I Built This is more produced than what we do. NPR. James Altucher, the James Altucher Show, that's really good. There's a few there, mate.
I just have to say Richard Feidler because I think it's the greatest thing ever.
Yep.
Conversations with Richard Feidler.
He's definitely your inspiration.
He is. One guest that you would love to interview.
John Howard.
Would Hannah ever be a guest, your wife, on a podcast?
It's interesting. I think Hannah and I would need an actual show rather than an episode. It'd be kind of like a bit of a mix of
has she listened to
with
one
children?
Has she listened to any episodes?
Oh, she listened to Kevin Foley and loved it. That's the only one she's listened to. She somehow reckons that she could relate to K-Fol in some weird way. I don't even know how. Like, but I think kind of I don't know. It was weird, but she loved it. She's actually planning to listen to Simon Phillips as well because Hannah's a former dancer and theatre head and obsessed with musicals.
Whopper connection.
Yeah, Whopper.
As well.
Yeah, she danced at Whopper.
Andrew Montesi, well, thank you. I sort of finish with some glowing, you know, thanks for giving up your time, you know, peeling back the layers of what it's like. But yeah. I don't reckon this deserves that.
No.
I've enjoyed having you on your own show.
Thanks very much, James. Looking forward to interviewing you next time. Thanks for listening to James and I chat about podcasting. Now, if you want to know more, you can connect with us. It's at roosterradio.biz. I also do some podcasting and content services through my marketing company. That's apiroconsulting.com. Get in touch with us. Happy to have a chat.